As Mark's gospel describes it, the poor fellow had devolved into the nature of a beast, breaking restraining chains and shackles, bashing himself with stones, and howling like a werewolf while racing around the mountainside. Luke's description of the Gerasene demoniac is a bit more restrained, but not much. He's called the Gerasene demoniac, and he is naked, a symbol of chaos, of being out of control and isolated from others. And he lives with the dead among the tombs. Right there, the picture is set. He shows all the signs the ancients associated with possession by demons. And the demon within identifies itself. I'm legion. A Roman legion had 6,000 men, so we're being told this fellow is utterly overwhelmed by evil spirits. Though he breathes, it's as if he's dead. His demons have nearly snuffed out his humanity. A glimmer of hope remains, however. It is the demoniac who approaches Jesus, and not the other way around. Somewhere in the recesses of his being, light continues to flicker. It is the human who seeks God, the human being who acts. And Jesus heals him, though not at the pleasure of a nearby herd of pigs. Our Jewish siblings have a sense of humor. The ancient world Jesus and his disciples occupied was considered a haunted world, its invisible landscape infested with unseen hosts, powers both good and bad. Evil entities lived in unclean spaces, lurked in tombs, and howled in deserts, and were thought to create illness, particularly diseases affecting physical control. Even today, the spirit world's real to many, and some Christians see Satan himself as alive and well and warring against the faithful. Belief in spiritual powers can be positive, of course. There's more than what merely meets the eye. But besides being a cause, sometimes, of serious disorders, it can too easily tend to veer into unhealthy dualism, seeing good and evil as equal battling forces, and evil as a force equivalent to God. Not Christian. Demons. Things that limit, things that control, things that hurt us. And they are real. And they're common, and they're ubiquitous. And I'm not referring to little red men with horns and holding pitchforks. What I am speaking of is what Richard Rohr calls, and I quote, the shadows within us, those things which we refuse to acknowledge about ourselves and which we desperately don't want others to see. Demons, he says, are those things that cause us to avoid looking squarely at ourselves in the mirror, in fear that the steely eye of the demon will force us to admit the degree to which we are defined by our shadows. We're usually able to keep these shadows under wraps, at least for a while. But inevitably, they break through. An Episcopal priest, Barclay Thompson, states, and this is a powerful quote, "They gain such strength that they fracture the bonds of our most important human relationships. They drive us from the bosom of our homes and into a spiritual, if not physical, wilderness. At worst, they leave us like the Gerasene, living as if already in the tomb and howling at those we love, at God, and at the world." Well, this is the Gerasene demoniac's hell. And we all have either suffered or currently suffer some kind of quote-unquote demon, something that limits and reduces our joy over God's beautiful created goodness. It's a shadow, and it goes by different names: worthlessness, alienation, guilt, shame. And shame is a powerful demon, a particularly virulent fiend. Psychologist Gershwin Kaufman calls it the disgust reaction turned inward. The disgust reaction turned inward. And nothing else can cut us as deeply to the bone. Shame is an inner torment, a sickness of the soul that can make us feel unworthy, particularly unworthy of love, even love given by God. And this feeling, you know, spreads like a cancer. It is a cancer. It spreads like an oil spill in the ocean to filter into nooks and crannies of the heart far removed from the scene of the wreck. In persons suffering toxic shame, there is an actual disowning of self. I'm a failure. Nobody can love me. If they only knew what I've done, what I'm really like. It's a merry-go-round of humiliation and self-loathing. We're given no hint of what drove the demoniac to his wretched condition. Could have been a mental illness, a physical disfigurement, perhaps, or guilt and shame for previous deeds. We've all felt bad about things done and left undone. A guilty conscience can wreak havoc with the soul. And as a priest, I've seen this more times than I can begin to count. In the mainland parish where I served 22 years as rector, I saw it heartbreakingly often. Parishioners telling me they, in their word, couldn't receive communion because X, Y, Z in their past kept getting in the way. St. George's was a particularly beautiful and historic church that often opened its doors to welcome visitors, to let them breathe in the century-old cedar and oak walls and furnishings, to gaze at its classic stained glass windows and generally delight in the holiness of the place. But there were some who, and I quote them, couldn't step inside, who didn't, and I quote again, feel worthy to cross even the threshold of the building. They couldn't forgive themselves for whatever had gone before, and so they couldn't believe God could or would, and felt unfit to enter. And I got a lump every time in my throat and a burning in my heart that was one part grief and one part anger, because no one should ever feel unworthy before God. The Gerasenes' condition was dire beyond words. Only God could restore him to life. But he dared to reach out with whatever little was still inside, and though we're told the demon was transplanted, into the pigs, I personally believe the man was liberated more than he was saved. That which had defined and driven him was by God's unconditional love set free. Rather than suddenly becoming less sinful, he became more joy-filled instead. That same freeing and sense of cleansing is available to everybody, and has been since the foundation of the Christian church, something only some branches of Christianity seem to think is available. It's used to be called confession, and in fact still is in the Book of Common Prayer, but it is now known as the Sacrament of Reconciliation, because that's the transformation the sacrament can bring. The word reconciliation means bringing back together. Bringing back together. It means making whole that which was split and formerly alienated. It reconnects us to God, though we're never disconnected. We're created in God's image, each of us, and that image stamped on our soul is indelible. No matter how fierce the demons, no matter how dark the shadows, God resides in you and me deeper still. Somewhere the light still shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome it. There is no such thing as an unredeemable person. No wilderness so wild, no tomb so cold that God isn't there already and forever. If the demons we suffer from are spiritual, the sacrament of reconciliation can make all the difference. Like the demoniac, we too can reach out for help if we need it and if we want it. In the Roman church, they have confessionals along the walls of the larger churches, or at least one somewhere. In Anglican churches, we usually hear confession in a private place. In this church, it would be in the chapel or somewhere else that the person chooses. Throughout the Gospels, Christ declares that we are forgiven way before we even ask, what the prodigal son parable keeps trying to get through to us. But sometimes it's hard to believe. And we're different, one from the other. So recognizing different personal needs, Anglicanism follows a lovely little ditty. All may, some must, I'm sorry. I put my mouth in, I put my mouth there. All may, none must, some should. In other words, all may. It's available to anybody. All you have to do is ask. None must. Because God does not require confession, as love never forces, only offers. And some should. Because some of us need to hear a personalized kind of pardon. We need to hear the actual words from another human being stated in God's own grace, you are forgiven. Sometimes we need it. And I promise unto death absolute privacy and total confidentiality. We need to hear, we need to speak and declare sometimes what's tearing us up inside. And we can do this as Christians, just like the demoniac did. We too can reach out and be set free. And to that I say, Amen.